The Tom Woods Show, episode 1971.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year. The 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Paul Gottfried is joining me today. Paul is the editor of Chronicles magazine, which I highly recommend to you. He holds his PhD in history from Yale University. He's the author of numerous books, several of which I've reviewed. I've made a small career reviewing Paul Gottfried books, and he is professor emeritus of humanities at Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk today about an article he wrote not too long ago called The Emerging One-Party State that I'm going to link to at tomwoods.com/1971. Paul, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
I cannot believe what happened to you. So it was a hit and run bike accident? I mean, was it? It sounds like it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was in fact a hit and run accident. And fortunately, I had my bike. So when I went over the car's hood, I think I fell on the bike. The bike, by the way, is indestructible. My body, unfortunately, is not. And I had, you know, most of the right side of my rib cage shattered, and I had a punctured lung, and I discovered a few weeks ago I also had a broken vertebrae. So the injuries were quite extensive, but the medical treatment I thought was excellent, and I'm on my way to recovery. The pain level seems to be subsiding more and more over the last few days.
Do you mind if I ask you a personal question? I'd like to know, if you don't mind sharing with the audience, how old you are?
Yes, by all means. I am 79.
Okay. And so you endured this. You went up on the hood of a car.
Right.
You landed on your bike, which, by the way, landing on your bike does not sound that comfortable to me. I'd rather land on the grass or something. But and here you are just sitting here chit-chatting with me. You must be like a regular Ron Paul over here.
You know, no, I thank God I am in very good physical shape for my age, for any age. And the doctors were struck by how well I recovered from this absolutely horrendous accident.
Well, thank goodness you're all right and that we're able to sit here and talk. I could be talking about a variety of pieces of yours, but you had a piece from a couple of weeks ago, The Emerging One-Party State.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is little different from how I think we might have written this article maybe 12 years ago, because, or maybe 20 or so. Because, for example, I followed politics pretty closely as a young man. But then when the election of 1996 came along and it was Bob Dole versus Bill Clinton, I just said, you know, I'm just not going to let these people laugh at me anymore. I can't possibly be part of this. So I withdrew from it for a while because I felt like that genuinely was a one-party state, in that if I vote for Bill Clinton or Bob Dole, I'm not even going to be able to tell the difference in what they wind up doing.
Right.
Today, I do think there is a bigger difference, let's say, between the parties, even though most of the Republican Party is hopeless and beyond help. There are at least some people in the Republican Party who can stand the sight of me, which is that, you know, that's something in this day and age. But now the one party, in the old days, the one party state idea was that the Republicans and Democrats are so indistinguishable, it's like a one party state. But now it's like the one party state idea is more that they're trying to suppress opposition and make them toxic and refer to them as domestic extremists and so on and on, so that all that will be left is another version of a one-party state, a different version.
You know, I think you're absolutely correct. You know, I'm a student of European history, and I've been looking at the way the system, a system similar to ours, operates in other so-called Western democracies. And if you look at Germany, they have something called a Blockparteienregierung, which is that you have a block of parties which form coalitions and run the country. The problem is all the parties look like the Democratic Party in the United States, so it doesn't make any difference. And the two parties in Germany that sort of stand out are the Freie Demokraten, which used to be classical liberal, like after the Second World War. Now they are just the same as the Christian Democrats. And then you have the AfD, Alternative für Deutschland, which is slightly right of center. Neither one of us would consider it to be anything like a right-wing extremist party. I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of like maybe conservative Republican by American standards. And that party is treated, you know, as the reincarnation of the Third Reich. But what you have are a number of parties that are just indistinguishable. Now, in the United States, we will have is a one-party state in which you will have the Democrats and maybe a few Republicans who will be allowed to stay in. I mean, they might have a Mitt Romney or Murkowski or a few other people will be allowed to sort of stay in the system. And they won't run very hard against them. But if they go away and there's just Democrats there, they'll probably be very happy, you know, just as happy. And the Republicans do not fight back very effectively. That's one of my arguments. I mean, things are happening which should be obvious. Like they're letting all those people in across the southern border, you know, and then taking them to cities and they're going to legalize them so they can vote for the Democratic Party, doing exactly the same thing, by the way, with Afghanistan. Afghanistan, as I argued in a later piece in the American Greatness, is in fact an immense success for Biden because they're bringing in tens of thousands of Afghanis who had nothing to do with being American translators. But what these people are going to do is vote for the Democratic Party. Then they're going to have H.R. 1 that they're going to try to pass. So you don't have to have voter identification and so forth. And with the media behind them, they can get away with a lot of this stuff. And the Republican Party is terrified to really take them on because they're going to be accused of racism, right? They want to suppress the black vote. Even though the blacks are voting in, you know, in higher numbers in many places than the whites, they are going to be, the Republicans are terrified of being accused of being racist. So they do not want to really look too deeply into, you know, where the frauds are occurring. Also, many of the Republicans are just happy to be rid of Donald Trump. They didn't like him. He didn't play the game the way they wanted him to. So, you know, they're quite happy that he lost. The problem, of course, is the Democrats are going to continue to do all the things they did in the 2020 election, right? They're going to have vote harvesting and or at least try to do this and so forth and, you know, pull out all kinds of votes in the middle of the night and so forth. This is going to happen again. And the point is, will the Republicans scream louder than they did last time? Another thing that concerns me is that the courts don't want to get involved in this stuff. You know, it's not that there were not transparent frauds in the 2020 election. There were, I think, as people like Patrick Basham and others have been able to show, there's just so many things the court might have looked at, but they just don't want to get involved. And my view is that unless the Republicans fight back very hard, Texas will turn blue. And that's what a lot of this, these, you know, the illegals they're bringing across the border will help bring about. And the Democrats will have their way in other states as well. So unless they do meet very stiff opposition, I think they may succeed in winning the presidential election in 3.5 years, despite the absolutely deplorable record of Joe Biden.
There are so many things I want to say about this. First of all, this is clearly a war now. This is not a debating society. And I think sometimes we're inclined to project onto others the way we ourselves think. So given that the left is just full of hateful people, they naturally conclude, I think some of them are sincere in thinking they're surrounded by people who are consumed with hate for people like them. I don't even think about half the groups that they're accusing me of hating. I don't even think about them. I'm doing my work every day. A thought would never even cross my mind. Well, likewise, because you and I, Paul, are good sports and, you know, we always had good sportsmanship and we're decent and fair, we might be inclined to project that upon other people inaccurately. And I think that there is some of that, especially when the Republicans talk about bipartisanship and these are our colleagues across the aisle. These are people who want your submission. That is what they want.
No, I think you're right, but I perhaps attribute less noble motives or less naivete to the Republicans. I think they just want to get along. You know, they enjoy the perks of their office. They don't want any trouble, and they're not really ideologically driven in the same way that the Democratic Party is. So it's a kind of asymmetrical warfare, although not in the sense in which we you know, talk about partisan warfare, but you have one side that is very eager to fight and to destroy its opposition and is driven by hate. You're quite right. And the other side that just wants to get along.
You have in this article of yours, which I'm going to link at tomwoods.com/1970, this statement here. You say, the Democrats have at their disposal a vast array of powerful allies, including the mainstream media, government surveillance agencies, educational institutions, and the permanent government administration. The electronic media now riding high will be able to shut off criticism of the Democrats just as they did in the presidential race of 2020. Why wouldn't this veto power be applied once again with the same deadly effect as it was last year? We're talking here about the 2022 elections, what they might do. I can't argue with you on this here, and yet it seems to me that even in my lifetime, I can think back to 1984, where it was Walter Mondale versus Ronald Reagan, and the Mondale people really, really, really did not like Reagan. And we really, really did not like Walter Mondale. Mm-hmm. But nobody spoke like this, the way you are in this article. Nobody thought of it as this, that, well, Reagan has at his disposal all these mechanisms he can use for dirty tricks. I mean, you know, everybody knew there were the occasional dirty trick, but something dramatic has happened in a very short amount of time. And what and how?
Yeah, I think one major difference between the two parties is that the Democrats control education and the media. And those are powerful forces for, you know, shaping public opinion. And what makes it even more interesting or perhaps more frightening is you have the same, you know, constellation of forces at work in every Western country, whether we're looking at Canada, Germany, France, Sweden, wherever we look, it is the same alliance of the permanent administrative state, which in Germany vote overwhelmingly for the Green, just the way they vote for the Democrats in the United States, who they vote for leftist parties in Canada. In Canada, of course, all the parties are leftist. But you have the same groups in power. Also, when the Democratic administrations take over, they're much more thorough in reconstructing government than the Republicans. I mean, you look at all the stuff that Obama was doing. He may have been a crummy president who didn't do much good for this country, but he certainly was extremely clever in the way he took over surveillance agencies, put his people in charge of government in a way that would be very hard to remove him, even if the Republicans won. And if the Republican president who succeeded Obama were, let's say, Mitt Romney or some more generic Republican type, that Republican would have just put up with all of this because that's sort of the nature of the Republican Party. Trump made a lot of noise. That's why they didn't like him. And they viewed him as a threat to the system that Obama had put in place. But you could see that, you know, once Trump is out of the way, the Democratic Party goes back to simply further consolidating its power.
I'm thinking actually ahead to 2024, because I live in a state whose governor is considered to be a plausible presidential candidate. I frankly wish he would stay in Florida because we really do need him here. Mm-hmm. And I think everything that's worst about him would come out in the presidency. He's a pretty good governor, but I think as a president, he would not be, let's say, as good. And also, I by no means think it's a home run that DeSantis beats, let's say, Harris in 2024. If we had a country full of normal people, they would say, wow, instead of destroying the fabric of society on the basis of totally arbitrary, obviously unscientific rules that are designed to make politicians feel like they're doing something, but all they're doing is depleting everybody's savings and ruining their livelihoods and keeping people out of the hospital for a bunch of other ailments because the hospitals are prioritizing other things. If we had normal people in this country, they would say, that's amazing. This guy had guts to stand up to everybody, stood up to other Republicans. He stood up to the whole world in saying, no, I'm not going to do this in Florida. That should be enough to get him elected. It's unbelievable to me, the psyop that's being played on the American public, that on Twitter, every once in a while, the term Death Santis is trending. Now, Florida is doing better than California in age-adjusted COVID mortality. That's all that matters. That's the only figure that matters is age-adjusted COVID mortality. Because obviously a state full of 40-year-olds is going to have better results than Florida, which is full of much older people. Mm-hmm. So when you adjust for that, Florida is actually doing really, really well. And yet we still see this unbelievable campaign to demonize him. I'm curious, by the way, before I, just to wrap this up and kind of try to make a question out of it, I want to know what your opinion of DeSantis is, because what I find it interesting about him is that, you know, he may be wrong sometimes. He's right, I think, most of the time. But what he perceives, and whether he's doing this purely for political reasons is immaterial to me. He perceives that there is a war going on and that the other side doesn't play by any rules and they simply lie and demonize people. So he is going to, instead of apologizing because he offended them or whatever, he's going to hit back just as hard. And then he's going to come up with new ideas. Like if some school district requires masks and won't allow parents to opt out for their children, then he's going to withhold the salaries of the superintendents and all these other officials. They've never heard of anything like that. That's the kind of guy who's fighting a war. That's how he acts. So what do you think about him?
No, I agree. I think he's admirable as a governor. And I also share your view that if he were to be president, he probably would be more like a generic Republican. But he is a courageous governor, and he's paying a high price. The media go after this poor fellow day and night. And I would contrast the situation to that of Gavin Newsom, who's a thoroughly loathsome individual, incompetent, dishonest governor, who well may be able to hold on to his post because of public sector unions, corporate capitalists sending him money, and the way the media has depicted his black opponent as some kind of white racist. The media can just twist reality in such a way that I just sort of sit there full of reluctant admiration. I think Paul Joseph Goebbels might have learned a lot from our media, which are even more evil, even more treacherous, even more mendacious than anything the Nazis could have come up with. But they can utterly twist reality. And I hope that this, you know, does not work against DeSantis. I don't know what his poll ratings are right now. I imagine that because of the Delta variant striking in Florida, they're probably not as good as his poll numbers were a few months ago. But you know, you probably have more information on this than I do.
Yeah, I don't know. What I did see was some poll that asked something like, do you think DeSantis is acting with his political career and future political aspirations in mind, as opposed to the welfare of the people of his state? And 51% of people said political. I mean, I think it's both, but I think I'm glad that his political goals align with the things I want him to do anyway.
Right.
But what a bunch of unbelievable, disgusting ingrates that you have a governor who isn't just a robot who, like an automaton, just repeats the stupid talking points of this idiot Fauci. You actually have somebody who is standing up for your right. If you want to stay in your house, nobody's stopping you.
Right.
But if you want to go out and make a living, he's standing up for your right to do that. And they're all, well, yeah, he's not good enough. Then go move to California, you creeps. You know, move to Australia if they'll allow anybody to cross the border.
Yeah, well, one of the things I find remarkable about these lockdowns is that politicians who favor them very often do very well in elections and in polls. In Germany, they do. You know, if you say, well, tomorrow, no, all the restaurants will be closed, or, you know, you could only appear on the street with a mask. That politician like Marco Zudo in Bavaria or Merkel, their poll numbers will go all the way up. The same thing is true in Australia, because the population believe that the government really cares about you. That's why they're destroying your business. That's why they're making you wear a mask outside. But unfortunately, the people by now have been so brainwashed by the media and the educational system that they think it is the government's proper function to entirely control their lives and make them do things that are utterly silly, like wear masks outside and so forth. They'll do this. And in some cases, they're even grateful to the government because it's showing this this putative concern about their well-being.
Yeah, I had this joke on Twitter where I said, I wasn't talking about politicians, but I was talking about all these businesses that say, your health is our top priority. Like if I go to shop at Bed Bath & Beyond and your health is our top priority. And so I said on Twitter, hey, listen, everybody, all you businesses out there, can you please stop making my health your top priority? Really, just knock it off. I don't need it. I'm tired of it. You know, all the time, or you know, for as long as I can remember in my lifetime, the entertainment world has, you know, swung one way politically. Now, back in back in the 50s, you know, Joe McCarthy would dig out people in Hollywood he thought were commies or communist sympathizers. But, you know, the thing is, when I think back to, I still, even now, I watch old episodes of What's My Line, you know, from the 50s and 60s. And on that show, you had Dorothy Kilgallen and you had Bennett Cerf from Random House. Bennett Cerf was a conventional liberal in his day, but none of them would utter any of this woke stuff on the show or anything like that because they didn't believe in any of that. No. Whereas today, you know, it would all be jokes that assume that the listeners all agree with them politically. There was none of that. They were all civilized. They were well-dressed. They had great affection for each other. They did not have contempt for the audience. And now it's not like that. I mean, they may also all have been liberals, but they didn't outwardly display the total contempt they have for their own fan base. And now it's the degree of unanimity in Hollywood and academia and everything is, to me, it's downright frightening. But what's even worse than that is that when one person shows up on campus to give a dissident-style lecture, this makes them all go crazy. Like, for example, in the music industry, Eric Clapton just came out with a song called This Has Gotta Stop about all this nonsense. And you see people saying, I'll never listen to Eric Clapton again. So what, you have a handful in the entire music world. I can count on one hand, I would say Eric Clapton, Van Morrison, the guys in Right Said Fred, and Morrissey are the only ones I can think of who have said a word about the COVID issue and how it's destroying live music and destroying the arts and all that. And even this handful is enough to make that side go berserk. There's something wrong with these people.
Yeah, well, I think what you have to understand is that to be a liberal in the 1950s, and I remember the 1950s well because I was in school then, to be a liberal meant that you favored something like socialized medicine, or you were against capital punishment, or perhaps, you know, at worst, you were squishy soft on the Soviets. But it did not mean that you wanted to give kids medicines to change their gender, or you thought that whether you were male or female or an it was just a matter of personal choice, or that, you know, men should be allowed to expose their body parts in female locker rooms because they're changing their gender. These are all positions that I think are intrinsic to what we now call liberalism, which has very little to do with the liberalism of the 1950s. And by the way, I speak as somebody who would not have been a liberal by 1950 standards, because like Tom, I am not a big fan of the welfare state. But these were perfectly normal people otherwise. What's called liberalism today is cultural radicalism that is intended to destroy all traditional family, morality, gender distinctions. It is much more radical in nature, I've argued in my writing, than communism. We may be facing the most radical form of the left that has ever existed. And it has become mainstream, and it enjoys the support of corporate capitalism and of the electronic media.
I don't know how to explain this. You know, it reminds me of something Ralph Rako once said, and he died long before things got to quite this level. But you knew Ralph Rako, the historian.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And he said to me once that, you know, he was like a fallen away Catholic, I think. And he said that he almost converted to some kind of Christianity by reading C.S. Lewis. He almost converted out of spite because he knew it was the sort of thing that all his enemies would have hated. He said that he didn't think that was a good reason to do it. And I agree, probably not a good reason. But then it was more the sheer organization of the forces of evil was so systematic and impressive and held so many people spellbound, despite how loathsome and idiotic it all was. Had to have some explanation other than merely natural. And I can hear that argument. Honestly, it's not like if the people on the left were promoting something that involved the highest aspirations of mankind and heroism and chivalry and the finest literature and music and good manners and all these sorts of things that a decent person aspires to, then I could understand people flocking to them.
Right.
But they are at war with every good thing, and most people feel social pressure to agree with them. I mean, that almost does require a supernatural explanation.
I entirely agree. There is something demonic about the left, and I think that theological term is by no means an exaggeration. you know, they are in some ways far more lunatic than the communist or fascist or this. What they want to destroy is human nature itself. And they sort of go about this in an angry, hateful manner. And there's very little that's standing in their way, unfortunately. In the end, it may come down to Muslims fighting them or something, because I don't know whether Christians are really up for the fight. But the this is not like earlier lefts. There's something much more thoroughgoing in its attempt or its efforts to destroy human nature than any left that has ever existed before.
Folks, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. We're living through changes that are happening very rapidly. We're seeing people turned against each other, our society being changed in ways we can't predict, and we don't know if it'll ever turn back. And that alone is enough to give people anxiety and worry about the future. But then on top of that, there's all the things going on in people's personal lives. Family conflicts, relationship problems. You may have problems sleeping, or problems with trauma, or depression, or stress, or anxiety. So I recommend a service I myself have used, and that's BetterHelp. They'll assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. You can send messages, all without leaving the comfort of your home. It's convenient, professional, affordable, available for clients worldwide. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Well, I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/woods. I want to say something in anticipation of what some listeners may say. Oh, you guys hem and haw about how bad the left is, but why don't you get out there and do something instead of complaining? I have a twofold response to that. Number one, I don't know what to do against these people. I don't know how they succeeded. I'm trying to figure it out. And if I did know, I'm not sure it can be replicated in the other direction. But secondly, I will take that objection head on. I've done plenty. For one person, I've done plenty. So for one thing, I helped to create a K-12 homeschool curriculum, the Ron Paul curriculum. Now, that's true. 8 gazillion people won't use it. But some families will be sustained by the existence of that program. Mm-hmm. And a lot of young people will be raised on knowledge that it's kept from most kids or most teachers don't know. They're going to get a great background. Again, I can't help every kid in the world. Who can? But I did that. I mean, that was something that can be partially credited to me. Or even before that, the way I put it, Paul, is for anybody out there who feels like he suffered from educational malpractice, I have a website called Liberty Classroom where I teach and Kevin Gutzman and some others teach courses. And these are courses people can take in their car. And this is where they get the information they should have gotten in school, but of course they didn't. So not to mention, of course, I do this podcast and this and that, but those are two very practical things where, no, I cannot destroy Harvard University and salt the ground that it was on, as John Dos Passos suggested, but I can do an end run around them by creating my own thing for some people. So there are alternative institutions that we still, at this point, have the social space to create. And we can do things like that.
I entirely agree with you. I think we do what we can, given our limited resources. We are not in a position to turn everything around. The ones who thoroughly disappoint me and even disgust me are the people who run the conservative media, conservative establishment, because they don't want to take on these issues. And what they do is talk about military budgets and pretend that we're fighting communism again. I mean, this is something that I find very tiresome. And I'm certainly no fan of communism or of socialism. But what we're fighting now is something of a much greater magnitude. And they don't want to take this on because they're trying to get drag queens to vote for the Republican Party, or, you know, they're engaging in other, you know, exercises of partisan politics. But I think it is important for people who are conservative to recognize that the war that the left is waging is against human nature. What they're doing is not simply trying to push bad economics on us. But I entirely applaud Tom for what he's doing. He's doing a lot.
Thank you.
I wish that other people on the right were doing as much.
Well, honestly, I think Gary North was right when he said, think about all the money that shysters have raised for pointless political campaigns, you know, where you get on their mailing list and they send you the dumbest, platitude-laden emails about the bad old Democrats, whom they are criticizing on only the most trivial grounds. We think about all the tens of millions of dollars, and not one of these people or think tanks ever thought, well, what if we created a K-12 homeschool curriculum based in part on our ideas? Why did that not occur to a single one of these people? The only answer I can come up with is that you make a very nice living being a political consultant in the Republican Party or perpetually running for office and spending people's money. It's actually a pretty good grifter thing to do. And so if you're not thinking about what is a practical thing that could improve the lives of the people I purport to represent, if you're not thinking that way, then you won't come up with ideas that would help them.
Yeah. I also can't help contrasting the way people on the right, whom I knew when I was young, lived and the way they conducted themselves and to these jokers that I see on Fox News. Murray Rothbard lived not quite in poverty, but he certainly, his major possessions were probably books that he read in his apartment. Take a look at Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity's homes. They live in these palatial mansions. They pull down millions of dollars for what they're doing. The conservatives, I remember, in the 1950s, unless they had personal wealth like Bill Buckley, were mostly poor people. They did not make fortunes out of being conservative. But they did stand for something. They were something much more than entertainers. And, you know, entertainers are shills for the Republican Party.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And of course, when you have Tucker Carlson, who is by far the best among them, has had problems with advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny. You can be as pro-war as you want. No advertiser is going to give you a problem. But the only really consistent anti-war guy, what, because he likes this or that Trump policy or something? It's ridiculous. Then they're all going to come after him. So in my case, I've got some sponsors. But if ever my enemies organized against me and for some, you know, somehow, none of these sponsors are such big companies. They don't care about the little Tom, which, you know, that I had a controversial episode. They just don't care. But even if my enemies got together and got rid of all my sponsors somehow, it would not affect me in any way. Mm-hmm. Because I've already thought about that. Well, what would I do? Well, I've got 87 other ways that I make a living, you know? So our people need to also be smart, because although I very much respect Rothbard, and Mises also said, I think he said to his wife at one point that I write an awful lot about money, but it's, you know, I'm destined not to have much of it, you know? There, in this day and age, even now, even with all the censorship, there are ways that a smart, astute, well-spoken person can build a following and can actually make a decent living at it. But these are the sorts of things that, you know, again, we teach this sort of thing in the Ron Paul curriculum. You know, it is the 21st century, and it's about time kids learn things that will, in addition to the traditional subjects, be of practical benefit to them. Like how to run a home business is actually one of the courses we have in that curriculum. Well, in this day and age, you need a home business because your actual business is making profoundly unreasonable demands of you, or is it even allowed to function because Dr. Fauci thinks it'll stop the virus?
Right.
You know, so we do need to think in terms of this. All right, let's get you on the record. I hate making predictions. You know, you and I are historians, and I mean, like, I've enjoyed reading your intellectual histories of various sets of bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about being a historian is that, you know, these things all happened. You know that for a fact. The future is much different, but what do you think the prospects are for not the Mitt Romney GOP, but for a genuinely fighting GOP in 2022 having something to show for itself in the elections?
Yeah, I think they will win in 2022 if the Democrats don't pull out lots of tricks at the last moment and do what they did in 2020. But I think the Democratic brand, you know, has sunk so far because of all the mistakes that Biden has been making. And also because of the unreasonable financial and other demands being made by the Democratic Congress, that they are going to lose. They'll probably lose both houses. The question is, what will the Republicans do to undo the mischief of the Democratic Party? And I'm afraid there I'm not as sanguine as about a Republican victory. I don't know whether they can muster the courage, the determination to not undo this, but to launch investigations of surveillance operations, other things that the Democrats have been doing in the last few years, and, you know, really hold the administration's feet to the fire. That I don't know, but I would hope that after what has happened, what happened in 2020, what is happening now, the Democrats, the Republicans will show at least enough courage or determination to do something to undo the mischief of the Democratic Party, and certainly to look into some of the shenanigans of surveillance agencies. And another thing that really concerns me is this double standard that, you know, Biden can do anything he wants. He can have his own phone call. He can lie on this phone call. He can misinform the public. Nothing is going to happen to him because the media is going to cover. And I think Dr. Fauci can commit perjury, you know, on the floor of the United States Congress and get away with it because the media is going to cover for him. But I think the Republican Party is going to have to learn to fight back, and they're going to have to simply accept these attacks. The media is going to attack them. That's going to happen, right? And even if the Republicans try to play nice, the media is going to attack them because they want the Democrats to win, right? So I think the Republicans are going to have to develop thicker skin. They're going to have to show some sense of conviction. Now, what I'm expressing, of course, are hope. You know, it is a hope that the Republicans will not be Republicans, but there'll be something better. But I would hope that when they win in 2022, assuming that they do, they will not behave like you know, the Republicans of old, the Republicans of Bob Dole and Mitt Romney, but will perhaps behave more like Rand Paul or some of the Republican senators whom we can admire.
Well, let's hope. Rand Paul has really risen to the occasion. There were times during the Trump years where he took very unpopular but correct positions. Mm-hmm. He ridiculed Russiagate even when some of his fellow Republicans pretended to think there was something to it. I say pretended to think because, mm-hmm. come on, Mitt Romney may be a lot of things, but he's not a complete moron. You know, I mean, I could say a lot of things about Mitt Romney, but he's not a fool. So I don't believe that any of them really believe that stuff. But Rand just, I think he had a rocky start as a senator. I think he was a little bit too hesitant and he wanted to be loved by the conservative establishment. Now I think he realizes that there is a huge number of politically homeless conservatives out there who don't care about the conservative establishment. And if he sits there and does something that no Heritage Foundation official would ever urge him to do, mm-hmm. namely to accuse Fauci of all kinds of mismanagement and whatever else, that he is going to get massive support for this because he's almost the only one doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, another thing that concerns me is that the conservative movement or what styles itself thus is utterly unprincipled. I mean, you discover that National Review is taking large amounts of money from the electronic media. They also are against any attempt to rein in the electronic media. But, you know, you really are not going to be kicked out of the conservative movement, as I've argued again and again, because you are taking money from the electronic media or because you have moved too far to the left, except perhaps on military questions. You know, Jonah Goldberg and Steve Hayes are regularly invited as honored guests onto Fox News. I'm sure if Bill Kristol wanted to come back, they would let him come back. On the other hand, I don't think too many people are going to be invited onto Fox News from, let's say, the Mises Institute or from my magazine, Chronicles. It's not that we're necessarily, you know, pushing exactly the same positions, but we're outside of what is the conservative club or the conservative mainstream. And I think the conservative movement is going to have to deal with its own left. You know, that just because Bill Kristol is Irving Kristol's son doesn't mean, you know, that he is not a leftist. Or Jonah Goldberg. I do not understand why I see that guy every other night on Fox News when I turn it on. But obviously, there is a kind of grace that you cannot lose, you know. Once you become sort of a movement conservative, even if you wander on the range, I'm sure David, I don't know, is David French back in good standing with the conservatives? I'm sure if he wanted to be, they'd let him back in.
Yeah, they might, but my gosh, is he a pathetic human being. Every time I see him, he's on the wrong side.
Yes, and critical race theory.
Yeah, he's never right. There's never anything he writes where Well, not that I read his articles, but unfortunately on Twitter, I keep finding people who I don't follow him, but they retweet his stuff, so I see him. And then I look at who retweeted David French. And then I say, why am I following this person? And then, boop, stop following that person. And eventually I'll get to a point where nobody I'm following retweets David French. And I can get back to the lifestyle I used to enjoy, the peaceful lifestyle, you know, where I, with my normal blood pressure. I look forward to those days.
Yes.
All right. Listen, let's talk. I know I, at some point, I really do owe you an article for Chronicles. I haven't written an article for a print magazine, though, in it wouldn't surprise me if it was 10 years.
You owe us at least one.
Yeah, no, I got to do it because Chronicles is where my very first article ever was published back in 1994. And doggone it, for years and years and years, I would get that in the mail and I would read it cover to cover. It was my favorite magazine and I've just kind of fallen away from it. I feel like I'm confessing to you that I've fallen away from a religion or something, but I really took great intellectual pleasure in it because it is not, you know, what passes for magazines and articles on the right these days is really embarrassing. I mean, it's, whereas I, in Chronicles, it's extremely well-written and learned, but not boring. Mm-hmm. It's not, I have a publication in mind, I'll tell you off the air, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, where it is high quality, great minds, but it puts you to sleep. Not Chronicles, punchy and great. So I, again, if you're like me, and you don't want to read everything on a computer screen, I mean, I know there are some of you who want to hold a physical magazine in your hands. I know you're out there. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to feel ashamed any longer because Old Woods is on your side. I want you to give Chronicles Magazine a try. So the website, I think, is chroniclesmagazine.org. Am I right?
Yes, it is. And then we have Intellectual Takeout, which is affiliated with Chronicles. We publish some of the same material on both websites.
I had not. Okay. Thank you for telling me that because I somehow hadn't put those two things together.
Right.
So I'll also link to that on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1971. Let's put it this way. I won't be too ambitious, but I won't be too lazy either. Before the calendar year 2021 is over, I'll submit something to Chronicles.
We will hold you to that promise.
Okay, as well you should.
You'll be periodically nagged until you fulfill it.
Well, thank you, Paul, for your time and glad that you're on the mend.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody. You know that on social media, you have some friends who are reliable, right? They're going to be right on everything. Then you have some friends who are going to be pretty terrible on things. And maybe these are friends from work or just casual friends you have because you like their other qualities. You're not really friends with them for their political insights, let's say, or friends from high school who never seem to learn anything, or heaven forbid, your own family members. And they write things that make you cringe, don't they? They write cringy things. Well, let me recommend a website you're going to enjoy, cringeposts.com. And that is the central hub for a podcast of the same name, Cringe Posts. And they, in each episode, the hosts select 3 to 5 social media posts they see in their feeds that spout some cringy nonsense, and they pick it apart. But to show that they're good sports and that they understand that anybody can write something cringy and, you know, maybe someday people can change. Well, they also in their shows go back and look at their own cringy posts from their own past. So they really are equal opportunity smashers, let's say. So I think you'll really enjoy that. Check it out at cringeposts.com. Both of the hosts are longtime Tom Woods Show listeners, so you know what to expect. They're going to be great, wonderful people, of course. So cringeposts.com is the website, linked to tomwoods.com/1971. If you forget about it later, but you remember the episode, you can check it out there. If you want to get publicity for a site you're thinking of creating, check out tomwoods.com/publicity before you start it, and you'll find out how to get nice publicity and other great, very helpful bonuses from me that won't cost you an extra cent. I have helped thousands of people with these various bonuses, so you should be one of those people. So check that out, tomwoods.com/publicity, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.